I invited Robert on the show today to talk about how he's applying his academic expertise in and passion for philosophy to the case for animal rights. In this case, working with the Non-Human Rights Project, which is fighting to win legal rights for non-human animals. This group is doing this through a case-by-case, state-by-state, and country-by-country long-term litigation campaign in the courts. And as I mentioned on last week's show, the Non-Human Rights Project lawyers are using habeas corpus lawsuits to demand recognition of the legal personhood and fundamental right to bodily liberty, just basic things, for individual great apes, elephants, dolphins, and whales held in captivity across the United States. In the case we talked about last week were the cases for three captive elephants. The cases that Robert Jones is working on is related to chimpanzees, correct?
Yes, two chimpanzees.
All right, let's get started. Why don't you go ahead and tell me, refresh me and the listeners about what you and your fellow philosophers are up to.
Jeannie, thanks for having me on the program. It's great to be here. So I can tell you a little bit about actually the project. The Non-Human Rights Project is a group, as you mentioned, it's a group of attorneys and who are animal rights folk who are trying to establish in the U.S. courts some kind of legal standing, legal precedence for non-human animals to be recognized to have standing. And I'll explain that in a second.
Right.
But one thing I can tell your listeners is what they can do is go to Netflix. Well, a Netflix-like, I don't want to give a free commercial for Netflix, but a Netflix-like...
a streaming medium.
A streaming medium, and you can see a film called Unlocking the Cage. And that is actually a documentary about this very project, which is a documentary about Stephen Wise. Stephen Wise is the head lead attorney who is spearheading this movement in the U.S. court system to have the first non-human animal recognized as actually having legal standing. So
that's Unlocking the Cage?
Unlocking the Cage. It's a great documentary, and it follows this particular case that I'm going to be talking about here, which has to do with two chimpanzees named Tommy and Kiko. But before I tell you all about Tommy and Kiko, I'll tell you how in the heck I even got involved with this project. I met Stephen Wise, the lead attorney for Non-Human Rights Project, at a conference in 2013. I was at a conference at Yale. It was called the Post-Human Conference. So it was a bunch of people who were talking about non-human animals and robots. Like AI stuff.
That's right. I was going to ask. Yeah, did they consider they were one of the side issues, and that was the sentience of artificial intelligence.
So Stephen, I met him at that conference, and of course he was there talking mostly about chimpanzees. But you know, it was basically like a post-human questions about the moral status of post-humans. So that's where I had first met him. But what happened? The way I got involved recently is. Here's what happened. The court, so one of the landmarks of this particular movement with the Non-Human Rights Project is that, I mean, this might sound like a small victory, but in 2012 is the first time that a U.S. court actually agreed to hear a case having to do with the potential moral or legal standing of a non-human animal. So that just having the court accept the case was a gigantic thing, because up until then, every time some organization, something like PETA, for example, courts would just reject out of hand, reject even listening, hearing the case.
So, right, because one of the tenets of our legal system is, do your plaintiffs have standing? Who is doing the claiming of what rights, mm-hmm. and does that individual, does that person have standing?
Yeah. So. And animals, non-human animals, do not have standing.
Right, because property doesn't have standing. It's property owners that have standing.
Exactly. And because in our culture, sadly, non-human animals are considered property, then it's like, as far as legally, think of it like this, like your toaster, you couldn't sue on behalf of a toaster or a chair because it's a piece of property. Likewise with non-human animals. So, of course, that's a problem in and of itself. But as they went through the court cases, with regard to this particular case. This particular case involves two chimpanzees who are in New York, who are kept, they're privately owned, and they are former actor chimpanzees who've starred in, or not starred, but been in movies, and so they're at this, basically they're at this roadside attraction kind of a thing, with like the, it's called like Ape World or something. Anyway, so these two chimpanzees, they're not together, but they're both in New York.
And so it's two separate cases,
two
right?
It's two separate cases, but they're being argued on like similar grounds.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. So the case that, the main case that has been going through, the central case, is the case of Tommy, who's a chimpanzee. I think he's like in his mid-40s. Chimpanzees can live to be over 60 years old. You might have more details on Tommy's case, but Tommy has, so here, let me give the bottom line is, what the team is arguing for is what's called a writ of habeas corpus, which you earlier mentioned. And some people may have heard the term habeas corpus, but what that means is that, technically it means that you're recognizing that there's a person who's being held in, unlawfully held in detention. And so, for example, if you were put in jail and you haven't had a chance to, you know, you didn't get your Miranda rights, or you're being illegally detained, your lawyer will go to court and submit what's called a writ of habeas corpus, which literally means like to present the body there in court, and then the judge will say, no, this person's being illegally detained, and then you're freed, or you're not, depending on how it goes.
So basically it's, what is the justification for this imprisonment?
Yes, so they're arguing that this chimpanzee Tommy and the other chimpanzee Kiko, they are being held, they are being detained in a prison-like environment against, you know, against their will. And they're trying to argue that Tommy and Kiko should be, have legal standing, they should be recognized as legally having standing. So here's how I got involved. I got an email a few months ago now at this point, from a group of philosophers, and some of them, for those people who are animal rights philosophers, you may know people like Bernie Rollin is involved, and Will Kimlicka, who just wrote a book called Zoopolis. So these are people who are pretty well established in the animal rights philosophy world. And there was an email sent out saying, we would like to produce an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief, on behalf of Tommy and Kiko. And the purpose of the brief is to get a group of philosophers who work on animal rights to present a sustained argument for why, in this particular case, these chimpanzees should get legal standing. And so, I know I got this email, and I was, and immediately I was honored and I was excited. I replied and said, I definitely want to do this.
Great.
It was like, how often, as you kind of mentioned in the beginning, how often do I get to use all this academic stuff I do around the academy to actually make a difference in the world?
Yeah, well, I mean, typically I was looking up amicus briefs, and they are really important with pushing forward a lot of litigation, a lot of big, like Supreme Court cases,
right,
in educating the judges and their clerks on these other outside of the legal system impacts of a particular ruling that they may or may not make.
Right.
So so these things, these briefs are very valuable, and they allow you to do the work that the lawyers can't.
Yes.
Right? And that's why you're invited in. So
yes.
And there's other amicus briefs that have been provided for these Tommy and Kiko,
these yes,
habeas corpus cases that more pertain to biology and the sciencey parts of,
yeah,
animal cognition and such.
Yeah,
and
even,
so
I think Larry Lessing at Harvard, I think he put, I don't have his name in front of it, he put through an amicus brief, and he's a, you know, influential lawyer there, but it was,
sure,
from a legal standpoint.
Right, and I know like Jane Goodall and other primatologists,
yes,
they speak to the biology and the social richness of primate life,
right,
and comparing it to human life and saying these two are parallel, right?
Right, exactly.
So what does the philosopher offer? What does this team of philosophers offer?
Yeah, this is a good
offer?
Question. So So first of all, just to reiterate something that you said, is the purpose of the amicus brief, just to reiterate again, is that it's to educate the judges. The judges have opinions about the moral status and legal status of chimpanzees, but the judges are not super familiar with the literature on animal rights. Like, the judges haven't read Peter Singer's Animal Liberation. And what has happened is there have been three cases made it to three judgments, and the judges have rejected the writ of habeas corpus. The judges have said, these beings are not persons, legal persons, so we can't say that they're illegally detained. Only persons can be illegally detained. Now, this is where the philosophers come in, because the issue of what it is to be a person, that is, now we're entering into the realm of what philosophers do. Now, you might think, on first blush, you might think, wait, being a person, that's just like being like a human. Like, if person just means human being, right? But that's actually not really the case. Person and legal personhood talks about a kind of moral, ethical, and legal standing. So I'm sure many people have heard that corporations are persons. Right. So the United States courts, they recognize corporations as persons. So you might say, oh, so like buildings and organizations and networks of these relations, they're not humans. So there's a clear case where we have personhood for non-humans. So the philosophers were brought in for the following reason. Because the judges, and Jeannie, I know you, we've had these conversations and you've had them on the air, is, you know, the average person, and a judge doesn't know about animal rights, the average person is going to think, wait a second, it's an animal. It's a chimpanzee. What are you talking about? How can a chimpanzee be a person? It's a wild animal, exotic animal. The judges aren't thinking, wait a second, chimpanzees are sentient, or chimpanzees might have rights in this kind of way.
No, in fact, they'll say, well, we have animal welfare laws to protect non-human animals, and that's all the law that we need. And that's why the work of the Non-Human Rights Project is, they're trying to, like you say, incrementally kick the door open, move that line away from between human and non-human, to, as Stephen Wise, I think he says, in Unlocking the Cage, we want to move that line, blur that line to include these highly complex animals like chimpanzees, elephants, and cetaceans.
Yeah. So this is exactly right.
I just want to say, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezina. We have Robert Jones in studio, and we're talking about the case for personhood for chimpanzees, for which he is writing an amicus brief for a court in New York.
So this case was filed just in December this month. This is the fourth. This is the appeal. It's the New York State Supreme Court.
Okay.
Now, let me give you a little background about, once again, where the philosopher fits in.
Yes, please.
So
carry on.
The judges reject the notion that the chimpanzee could possibly be a person. And of course, judges, they have to give reasons. Well, I myself and my fellow philosophers who are involved in this particular project, let me just say, as a philosopher who argues for animal rights, and myself and most of my colleagues who teach animal rights in a classroom, it doesn't take long for you to hear every possible objection to say that animals have rights. They're not human, they can't think, they don't have language, right? So we're very familiar with hearing all these, and as you, Jeannie, are as well, being a vegan, I'm sure people, you know, we all have experienced this kind of challenge of, how can animals have rights? A cow can't, you know, do arithmetic or something. So these are the kinds of arguments that the judges, these are, you know, I'm imagining, to be a judge, you have to be somewhat smart, I guess. Although I don't know if Clarence Thomas is that smart, but anyway,
you just had to go there.
But anyway, So the judges, they just give these kind of standard answers.
Yeah, they're very conservative. I mean, and that's not to mean necessarily politically conservative. They are just really reluctant to break new ground in the law.
So when they render their opinions, okay, I'll give you an example. The first time that Tommy was rejected as being a person, here was the argument was, to be a person requires that you can bear legal and moral responsibilities and duties. So to be a person, and let me give you an example. So to say that someone is a person is to say that they're kind of, in this sense, they're morally blameworthy or morally praiseworthy. So if they do something, they have a sense of right and wrong. So the judges said, look, chimpanzees, they're not persons because they don't have, you can't have a responsibility for, a chimpanzee can't have a responsibility or a duty to do something or to respect a certain right of someone else. And that's what it is to be a person. So they rejected it. Now, if you just stop and think about that just for a moment, you might think, huh, are there human beings among us who are incapable of bearing responsibilities or having duties? Well, how about, I don't know, a baby? Huh. Does a baby have duties and responsibilities? No.
None.
Is a baby a person? Yes. So right there is a very simple counterexample to the judge's decision saying that's what a person is. So, of course, back to court they went and said, the last judge said this. So then the next judge says, well, to be a person requires that you have entered into some kind of contract. So there's an implicit contract. You know, you mind my rights, I mind your rights, but that's some kind of implicit contract. Chimpanzees cannot consent to contracts, so therefore they are not persons. Well, just think about that for a moment. Are there Homo sapiens among us who cannot consent to contracts? Yes. Are they still persons? Yes. Something's wrong, right? So these are the kinds of arguments that the judge gives. So the project...
But those are legal arguments too, correct?
They're legal arguments, but they're confused arguments. I mean, you would expect that someone... I mean, just if you just think a few minutes about it, if you're going to render a judgment that says to be a person, you have to have the ability to bear duties and responsibilities, why wouldn't in the next sentence you think, uh-oh, wait, I've just boxed myself in because now babies aren't included as persons, which, of course, we want babies to be included as persons. We want babies to have the rights and protections of persons. So here's the project that I'm involved in, and I'm very excited about it. And that the project is to produce an amicus brief in which this group of us, there's about 10 or 12 philosophers, and we're sort of doing a division of labor, divide and conquer. What we're doing is we're taking every possible plausible notion of personhood, all the notions that personhood that the court has already ruled on, and we're anticipating all the other, the other non-insightful versions of personhood that the court may come up with.
The student versions of personhood.
And we are laying them out in a document, and basically here's what we're saying. We're saying, here are, I wrote them down, we have four different notions of personhood. And what we're saying is, we're saying on these four notions of personhood, no matter which one that you endorse, either Tommy and Akiko are persons, or there will be a large swath of humans who will be denied personhood.
Very good, very good.
So this is our strategy. And so what I'm working on with Will Kilmica, I'm working on, because here's what the one of the latest judgments was that chimpanzees are not members of a rich social community, and personhood is a concept that describes a being who's a part of a rich social community.
Right. Yeah. People will say, "What makes humans humans we're highly social.
We're highly
species.
Social.
Right. Okay.
And chimpanzees don't have that. That's the argument. Now,
imagine that.
Now, when you look at chimpanzee, this is where Jane Goodall, and we have the biologist. So we have we have a multi-front, attack going on here.
Interdisciplinary
arguments. When you look at chimpanzees actually have a very, very rich social culture that involves hierarchy. There's even proto ethics, there's proto-laws. Chimpanzees, some chimpanzees break a rule, they're punished. So to say that chimpanzees don't have a rich social life is to ignore empirical facts. And secondly, if you think about someone like Tommy or Kiko, someone who's been living with humans their whole lives, they've been removed from their rich chimpanzee culture, and they have no other, the only community that they have is the human community. We've brought them into our community.
That's right, yes, because just so the audience knows, Tommy and Kiko are part of that era of socialization of primates by raising them in a human family, like wearing diapers and sitting at a table with other humans in a human family. So that's how these two chimpanzees were raised.
With their own kind.
Yeah. Which is also part of this unusual captivity, right? Unusual and extreme imprisonment, right? To be separated from one's own kind.
That's what we're arguing, that is a kind of imprisonment. And the only option, moral and ethical option is for those chimpanzees to be brought to sanctuary.
A true sanctuary.
A true chimpanzee sanctuary to be returned to their community. But quickly, just to run through, there's the social contract theory, which I said, you know, they need to do contracts. There's the species membership theory that says, like, to be a person is to be a member of the species, which, you know, look, there's a simple counterexample of that. If a Martian landed on Earth tomorrow and could speak like seven languages and could, you know, play three-dimensional chess, we would recognize that Martian as a person. We would not say that Martian was a piece of property. So to say that to be a person requires that you are a member of the biological species Homo sapiens, it doesn't hold water. So these are the kinds of arguments that we're presenting. The trick is, and Jeannie and I have talked about the difficulty of translating kind of like academic ease into regular plain old English is a challenge. So getting 12 philosophers together to produce an amicus brief that the average New York Times reader can understand is kind of like herding cats. It's been trying, but we're doing the best we can.
Well, I mean, your audience here are judges, so
yeah.
So you don't need to go down to, you know, K through grade level reading, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I read an amicus brief that was prepared by one of the other attorneys on these matters regarding habeas corpus and its historical use as a very valuable tool for forging new areas of law for slaves, for women and children in like the 17th century, its early uses. And then most recently for Guantanamo Bay prisoners. And it was such an interesting read. So yeah. I think that the value of your amicus brief will be valuable for these cases, for Tommy and Kiko, but also for a larger community, either your own academic community of philosophers, and maybe continue to make some ripples. You already have by virtue of your discipline in terms of animal rights and veganism and speciesism as your academic one of your academic emphases, but also in just the lay public and to be used by other groups, say, you know, the Chico Vegan Meetup Group or by some of the other animal sanctuaries. They can use your brief, your collaborative brief as yet another tool.
Well, the fantasy is, if I had to, you know, wave the magic wand and make the fantasy come true, the amicus brief helps Tommy and Kiko be established as, you know, the first time that non-human animals are established as persons. And then the amicus brief gets like published in the New York Times. And then from there, it's chimpanzees, then it's cetaceans, then it's elephants. And that amicus brief is used as a kind of resource and reference, as you mentioned, other amicus briefs in history. For example, a famous amicus brief has to do with assisted suicide, where a group of philosophers wrote an amicus brief, and that amicus brief has been referred to and republished many, many times.
Yes. If you Google that, it's all over the place. So we are coming to the end of the hour. We've been talking with Robert Jones about the Non-Human Rights Project to gain habeas corpus writes for two chimpanzees in captivity using the writ of habeas corpus, using the concept that they are being unjustly held as persons, and that they deserve and merit under the law to be allowed to live in not such egregious captivity. These suits aren't about like freeing them so they can wander the streets of New York. It's about so they can live with their own kind and not be so unjustly deprived of their right to be with their own species. Yes?
Exactly.
All right. Well, I hope to keep in touch with you as the brief gets finalized and ultimately gets used in court.
I'll keep you updated.
Yeah. Okay, now it's time for the Animal Rights Calendar of Events, and we just have a few events going on. This Saturday, December 16th, the Chico Vegan Meetup Group is having a trip to Farm Sanctuary, it's going to be a guided tour along with a bring-your-own lunch to follow the tour. That'll be on Saturday, December 16th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and you can find that on the Chico Vegan Meetup Facebook group under the events tab. If you can't attend this event, if you don't have enough lead time or are waitlisted, they will be scheduling another tour in January 2018. And then we have one final piece of business to take care of, and that's the animal rights quote of the week. This week we have a quote from Carl Sagan, who is not an animal rights philosopher, but the beloved American astronomer and author. This quote is from his book titled Dragons of Eden: Speculations on the Evolution of Human Intelligence, in which he wrote, "Like other mammals, apes are capable of strong emotions. They have certainly committed no crimes. I do not claim to have the answer, but I think it's certainly worthwhile to raise the question, why exactly all over the civilized world, in virtually every major city, are apes in prison?" And that is indeed a thought to think about. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZVR listeners like you. Many thanks to Guillermo Mash and to Sue Hildebrand for their engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against, and this is Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind, and go vegan.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.